There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. Another couple hours of live local talk. You know how to get through to the show. Three, I think. If you don't, cool. We'll stop for a second. Remedial portion is fine. Welcome to the show. 343-0106. 343-0106 for a phone call. Also gets you through to the text line. And if you have the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can use that to leave us one of those talkback messages. It's a microphone icon on the front page of the app. All you do is press that, lets you record the message there. All right, coming up on today's show, I just give you a little heads up for hour number two. Congressman Jerry Carl joins us. He has an op-ed out about the disaster relief, the lack of disaster relief from the federal government. We'll talk to him about that. Also, staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams joins me around 12:35 as we look at another big, big hurricane tracking through the Gulf, looking like impact somewhere. Yeah, they have the cone of uncertainty, but the center of that is Tampa, St. Pete, that general area. Obviously, it could move. We'll get an update from Dr. Bill at 12:35 to talk more about that. Now, without further delay, the busiest man in Alabama media, so I'm sure he's real thrilled that I kept him on hold here for a minute or two. It's Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Sean. How's it going?
Good. Can we make a pact right now? I was good last. Can we not talk any football? No football discussion?
Hey, man.
Or do you want to take your hit? Go ahead and take it, and then we get on the news.
No,
today.
It's not that at all. We're just had a friend. An Alabama fan friend texted me that night after the game saying, well, that was embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, well, speaking for the frequently embarrassed, we understand. That was a tough one to lose.
Yeah, it was bad. I may address that. I may just pretend it didn't happen. I don't know, later on in the show. I want to talk about a couple things here, I guess, internationally, first of all. It's 1 year since the Hamas attack on Israel. So we've been a whole year here, and go from the attack of October 7th to now, at least two front, you could argue maybe a three front war for Israel, right? I mean, we've got them fighting Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and honestly, fighting Iran as well.
Yeah, and all of it unprovoked. All of it started by Hamas when they attacked a year ago today, killing, maiming, raping, kidnapping, just the most, atrocious, vile kind of violence you can imagine. And yet, what it revealed was just how much hatred there really was towards Israel, and it all really comes from Iran. I mean, yes, Hamas... isn't located anywhere near Iran, and so isn't Hezbollah. But these are two groups that are propped up by Iran. They are trying to destabilize the region. They knew that Saudi Arabia and others were very close to signing the new Abraham Accords, something like it. They revealed themselves. I've been really... enthusiastic and pleasantly surprised at just how aggressive Israel has been in responding back. They have pretty much gotten rid of Hamas. There may be some remnants out there, but they have completely demolished their ability to make war. Same is going for Hezbollah. I mean, the creativity and ingenuity of which these attacks would happen. So, you know, the good news is, if you want to, I mean, obviously we're commemorating a horrible day, but the good news is a year later you look back and Israel is winning. They're winning and they're doing it against all odds and really with some uncertain, you know, political and foreign policy support from the United States.
You know, I wonder on the response from Vice President Harris, candidate, and President Biden, the response on Israel. Yeah, you know, we talk about this a lot. In a primary, and even though international shouldn't be, but in a primary, Democrats go left, Republicans go right, and then come time for the general, then things come back more towards the center. Now, I think it's got a lot of believability problems here, but rhetoric I heard from Governor Walz over the weekend and things I've heard Harris say and Biden say, it seems like they're trying to swing it back to the center here, you know, on our support for Israel. I mean, they still give a little caveats, but yeah, but except this, but it seems like the rhetoric is more back pro-Israel. I mean, I even heard it from Harris and Walz.
Yeah, and I've been pleasantly surprised to see a little bit of that. At the beginning of the right after the attack and at the beginning of Israel's incursion into Gaza, you had, you know, President Joe Biden had a lot of very strong statements of support. The State Department did. We, you know, I was pleased with how the president supported Israel. And of course, over the months, that fades away. And Israel kind of, they know these things happen. They know that the United States, other countries, they only have a certain amount of period where they can act without criticism, and that's long past. So, you know, the one thing that the vice president and Biden too, the one thing they've just kind of given up on, and then they will just kind of come out and say it rhetorically, is yes, we want a ceasefire. There needs to be a ceasefire. I mean, I don't know if they understand what that means. I think maybe the world doesn't understand what that means sometimes, but that basically means surrender. Because once there's a ceasefire, the minute you open it back up, it comes with all kinds of problems. And by the way, there was a ceasefire on October 6th of last year.
Yeah. We'll see what I worry, and I continue to worry about us getting drawn into this wider regional war with so many assets in theater and so much. You know, I know you can, because I have this belief. I can support Israel's right to defend themselves. I can say we continue to help them with munitions and be a backstop for them, and also say I don't want any part of that war with Americans, you know, with boots on the ground or planes in the air over Iran.
Oh, and I agree. I think just like they have in the past, Israel is doing the Western world a huge favor right now. And while getting criticized from the Western world, they're winning. They have Hezbollah, you know, on its heels. They have Iran on its heels. And that's probably our greatest geopolitical adversary right now. They're hurting Iran and Iran's ability to threaten the West. So I think we should welcome that. And I'm not saying we need to get involved, but I'd give Israel plenty of latitude because they're the ones that they know they're going to be first. Whatever Iran decides to do, they know that Israel's coming first. We might be on the list too, but they're first. And so they are preemptively defending themselves because they just found out a year ago today, they just found out that they cannot trust the neighbors that hate them, that there was peace and prosperity, and now in one evening, that was ruined. And what we saw is the reality of the situation. They were laying in wait, trying to harm Israel. So yeah, I'm a little more hawkish on this, Sean, mm-hmm. than I am on a lot of other things. But they absolutely deserve the right to defend themselves. And again, I think they're doing us a favor. We've got our biggest global foe on its heels. Let's finish the job.
All right, bring it back home to Alabama here. And you had reported this, I guess, in the email yesterday morning, and there's some discussion here around the station today on it. Representative Chris England has got this It's a cash bail bill. Can you explain HB 42? Can you explain what this would propose to do?
Well, what he says is that there is plenty of problems when it comes to, you know, the statutory setting of bail and having that really, to hear him talk, kind of run by the bail bondsman industry, and that it's not just those posting bail, but the judges, the prosecutors, even the victims of crime, everybody that wants justice to move quickly. And he's got a bill that would essentially allow for a court clerk at their discretion to accept a lesser amount of cash bail set by the judge for the accused. It kind of goes back to setting mandatory minimums in state law and how that can lead to bad outcomes and giving judges and clerks more flexibility in how to do all that. I'm not saying it's good or bad. That's what he's trying to pass this for a couple of years now. But you're starting to see a theme emerge for this next legislative session over the issue of crime, criminal justice. You know, obviously the shooting in Birmingham was a big deal, but even before that, the people were unhappy with violence in some of the state's large cities. They want to do something about it. But there's also another side to that in terms of funding the justice system. How are these things funded? Are there perverse incentives?
Mm-hmm.
Are prosecutors adequately funded? Are we giving... Why are victims oftentimes at the very end of the trough in terms of payouts? So I think you might start to see this continue to emerge. Lawmakers are looking at our criminal code to see what makes sense, what can lock the bad guys up, but also make prosecutors better funded.
Just joining us, talking to Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News and the host of Capital Journal. Speaking of which, a big discussion here last week, and there was comments from, of course, the ILA, comments from the Port of Mobile, and also comments from former Congressman and CEO and President of the Mobile Chamber of Commerce, Bradley Byrne. You had him on to talk about the dock workers' strike. What was his take with you on that show?
Yeah, and I appreciated Bradley coming on, and, you know, because we had obviously reached out to John Driscoll, the mm-hmm. Director of the port, and rightfully so. He doesn't really need to be out there on TV, you know, banging the drum for what. And it was before the deal was made. So really okay. Appreciate Bradley taking the time. I know they've had an incredibly busy week responding to all this. But, you know, he had a very positive outlook. He said, look, I expect a deal to be made. You know, by January, he expects that to happen. He's not worried. It was not ringing the alarm bell at all. But it also helped highlight just what an incredible time this is right now for the port. I mean, with the dredging going on, with the channel widening, intermodal facility, everything that's going on, it's one of the fastest growing container port in the United States. So, you know, even a little bit of interruption, we don't want to interrupt that progress. So I appreciated him coming on. And again, he was optimistic, but also laid out the stakes about what a longer work stoppage would be. It just would mean a complete disruption of the life as we know it. And, supply chain was bad. We saw how that raised prices a couple years back. Imagine every port shutting down. That would be a disaster.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, 90 days... You probably thought this way through is the same window that if they would have brought in Taft-Hartley, right? So the delay in negotiation into January, it's the same period of time the federal government would have used Hurricane Helene as the impetus. They could have put them back to work for that period of time anyway.
I didn't think about that, but it makes sense. But they did it. Well, that would have been really interesting because it probably would have been a decision of the president. Maybe he would have, maybe he wouldn't have, but he's certainly been, you know, more of a pro-union
right
person. They probably didn't want to put him in that position. If I'm guessing right.
Yeah, but. I kind of guessed that too. Some union boss discussion with the Biden administration, and they're like, hey, why don't we just do this? Take this part of it with the money part of it, and then we'll leave the automation to a debate that goes into January. That would be the same window as they would have to put you back to work. That's just me thinking. That's me writing.
It stands to reason. And another thing, and I know y'all have probably talked about this, but one thing Bradley pointed out was the the automation in question that they're talking about is really a scanning mechanism that makes it safer for workers. At least that's the argument he was making. It makes it safer, more secure for workers themselves. And yes, they do a more efficient job rather than a guy holding a clipboard. And so I can understand the fear of the unions in terms of losing jobs to automation, but every industry, you know, automate has some type of technology that threatens jobs. I mean, we go to the ATM, you know, it's just ingrained in our society. They can't expect too much.
Well, I mean, look at, I've mentioned it all last week. I mean, if you were to look at what a radio station looked like when I got in 30 years ago for staffing, and we are an oddity. We're more like an old radio station for staffing, but today's stations, I mean, they're like ghost towns. I mean, the automation's taken so many of those jobs away. If you look at all the, you know, go down your radio dial, there's only a few of us out there that, you know, have actual, you know, full staff.
Well, same thing in TV. We don't have people behind the cameras anymore. Those are all robots. Go to the grocery store or the convenience store. You're putting your food and they're scanning your food like that. It's crazy. I mean, I'd love it for it to all be the good old days, but the key is to figure out how to adapt and evolve and not be too afraid of technology. Plus, we don't want to be uncompetitive with the rest of the world. They're all doing this. You know, we want our ports to be competitive. I think that's a really important point.
All right. If people want to check out this email we've been discussing and even more, get to look at TV, how do they find the email and how they find Capital Journal?
It's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. You know, you can sign up right there on the homepage, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list to get those emails every morning. And yes, Capital Journal's on Alabama Public Television. Best way to find it is on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search Capital Journal and click that subscribe button.
Good stuff, Todd. As always, man, I appreciate our conversations. We'll do it again next week.
All right, Sean, be good.
All right, there he goes, Todd Stacey, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
It's like 12:26, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad you're along on this Monday. Yeah, 1 year since the October 7th attacks. I wrote this down. I typed it in. This morning, early, when I was in doing the morning show, but it's... So 1 year since the Hamas attack on Israel, and while I do see nuance, right? I do see nuance in stories that maybe puts me on the wrong side of both sides. I believe in Israel's right to defend themselves 100%. I don't feel like we need to be part of it. I don't think we need to be boots on the ground and having our people there. I just don't. I feel like it's like this idea to try to get us into this war is what it feels like to me. And putting so many assets there, are they a deterrent? I don't think they're in this. It's not like the old way of war. I don't think it is a deterrent the same way. I think the Iranians are still going to do what they're going to do. The terrorist groups are going to do what they're going to do. And now we have more of our people in harm's way. I did write this down, though. Would you rather have, as people look at it and say, well, you know, look what's happened to the Palestinian people. And I'm not ignorant to that. There are so many civilians on the Palestinian side in Gaza that have been killed, non-combatants. But I would say this, would you, if you're looking at the two groups, let's not talk Israelis and let's not talk Palestinians. Let's talk about the warring portions of this. Who, if you're on a plane, who would you rather see boarding your plane? Would you rather have a Hamas contingent or an IDF contingent? Like, they're coming on the plane. Here they come. Who would you rather have? I mean, to the people who say, well, you know, Sean, the IDF has done bad things. I've read those stories, too. I'm not ignorant to it. But in the totality of it, who would you rather have boarding your plane? Like, hey, we're welcoming. There's a dozen people coming onto the plane here with us. You can have a dozen people from Hamas, or you can have a dozen IDF. Which one? Yeah. You can answer on the text line if you'd like at 343-0106. All right. And this texter says, Sean, I want to hear about this Lebanon aid the U.S. government is giving them. You know, that's the thing, giving the aid to the Lebanese army, which, how about this? The Lebanese army is not the biggest military in Lebanon. Hezbollah is bigger than the, and the discussion is that there are people drawing two checks, the people that are Hezbollah and also in the Lebanese army. I've heard these stories over the weekend on that. We'll talk about it more coming up on Midday Mobile, 343-0106. Be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
By 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along. 343-0106. How you get in touch with us? All right, let's go. Let's get started here to our staff meteorologist, tropical weather expert, Dr. Bill Williams, as we're looking at another big, not just tropical weather, something forecast to be a very big hurricane heading for Florida.
Well, it is going to be a big hurricane, and right now it's trying to establish some records. The storm is located just off the northwest coast of the Yucatan Peninsula. It's moving east-southeast around, anywhere from 8 to 10 miles per hour. But now the highest winds are up to 165 miles per hour, making it a Category 5 hurricane. It's a very small storm right now, and the eye is extremely small, but very, very intense winds around that center. It looks like it will just come very close to the north coast of Yucatan and then gradually make a turn to the northeast and begin the track across the eastern Gulf of Mexico. And in the last 24 hours, the winds have increased in that storm some 80 knots, and that has only been exceeded twice, Hurricane Wilma in 2005 and Hurricane Felix in 2007. And so it's a dramatic increase, and the pressure fall is remarkable hour by hour. But as the storm turns to the northeast and heads into the eastern Gulf, several things are going to happen. One is that the eye wall, which is very small right now, will most likely undergo some eye wall replacement cycles. And what happens is that the eye reaches its smallest diameter, and then it begins to break up, and a new eye wall forms at a larger size, and it goes through the whole cycle again, the eye getting smaller and smaller, and the storm gets very intense. So when that replacement cycle begins, the wind velocity in the storm will decrease a bit, and then it will build back up, and it may go through several eye wall replacement cycles. The second thing is that as it gets closer to Florida, wind shear will start to take its toll on the storm. However, it looks like it will remain as a major hurricane all the way to the West Florida coast. And a third thing is the storm is going to get bigger in size. It's very small right now, but it will cover a larger area as it approaches and finally reaches the Florida coast. The likely target right now appears to be Tampa and Tampa Bay. And if that occurs, then they're in for a very large storm surge, double-digit storm surge. And that will also be the situation to the south of Tampa, Bradenton, Sarasota, and all the way down to Fort Myers. They're going to get a major storm surge, record-breaking, with this storm. It's very unusual for the west coast of the Florida Peninsula to get a head-on impact of a hurricane. Usually hurricanes are recurring as they affect the western portion of the Florida, not the panhandle, but the peninsula. And but this one might be a direct hit, and of course that increases the storm surge. So it looks like Tampa may be in for the real direct hit, but it will affect areas to the north, that is getting on up towards Cedar Key, but nothing like what would happen from Tampa southward.
So, Dr. Bill, from just listening to the last couple minutes from you, it's not hyperbole to say this is a record-setting hurricane we're talking about right now.
Yeah, it's going to be it's breaking some records now and pressure falls, and it's still going to break some more records before it's through. But, yeah, and it's going to be a big rainmaker also. Although it's not going to be crawling along, it's still going to produce a lot of rain, a lot of flooding through central Florida. This could end up being an Interstate 4 storm. Interstate 4 is the highway going from Tampa to Orlando. And it's very possible that the center of the storm could be very close to that interstate or right over it during its track across Florida. And then eventually the storm will come out into the Atlantic between Cape Canaveral and, say, old Daytona Beach. And then it would move out directly out into the Atlantic. We don't expect it to go up the East Coast, but to move right out into the Atlantic toward Bermuda.
Dr. Bell, you talk about with the eyewall replacement. Is it, you mentioned the shear, but back to eyewall replacement, is that the hope maybe that it'll be going through one of these cycles once it gets closer to shore and diminishing in speed?
Yeah, the recycles will help reduce it a bit, but then the storm will intensify back up again. So history has shown that it doesn't remain a Category 5 for a long period. It goes through those cycles and it drops off a bit, perhaps dropping back to a Category 4, maybe a 3, and then build up. But the other thing that would help a lot is some wind shear. That is, the upper air winds become strong enough to impact and weaken the storm. However, it's still going to be a major hurricane, and most likely it would reach the coast of Tampa as at least a Category 3, maybe even a Category 4. But this track where it's so intense is going to push a lot of water. And even though it may, say, drop off to a Category 3, it's going to push water equivalent to more of a 4 or 5. And so you get a pretty sizable storm surge.
Unbelievable, Dr. Bell. And that timeline, once again, to Wednesday, you're looking at for landfall?
Yeah, landfall looks like it'll be Wednesday evening or Wednesday night. And then for a good portion of Thursday, it will move across and weaken across the peninsula. When it moves offshore and out into the Atlantic, it'll still be a hurricane. It could be a Category 1 or maybe even a 2, but more likely a Category 1.
All right, Dr. Bell, we appreciate the update. We'll be checking back with you on Milton going forward.
Okay, Sean.
All right, there he goes. Staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams, tropical weather expert, mincing no words there that this is a record-setting hurricane in its strength right now. And, you know, hopefully it goes through one of those eyewall replacements as it gets close to shore or possibly, possibly get the wind shear. But, like so many of us, got friends there. I know Dan's got a sister in that area. I got a buddy in Tampa and a buddy in Orlando. And it's where do you evacuate and move? Because one of my buddies who lives in Orlando, I asked him, we were texting today. And I said, what are you going to do? He said, well, he thinks it may be worth because where he is, he hasn't seen bad flooding. Although, let me point out, there have been some storms here in the last 5 years that have put a lot of rain into the Florida Peninsula and caused flooding inland, even though they don't have the issues they do up in the mountains from Helene, that kind of thing. But there's just so much that it just ends up flooding big acreages in the flat areas of, of Florida. On top of that, he said his mom, he's like me, we have, senior citizen moms, mature mothers, and he's trying to talk her out of staying in Naples. So what do? You go down to Naples, try to get her. You're on your way back to Orlando. He's really caught in a situation where a lot of us have been in that when storms are coming. So we just will watch what's going on down there and pray for those folks as this very big and serious hurricane making its way into Florida Wednesday, says Dr. Bill. And speaking of that, we talked about it this morning, and joining us here in just a little bit on the show, Congressman Jerry Carl will join us because he has an op-ed out now over at Yellowhammer News talking about the putting Americans first, where FEMA is. If you throw this on top, you can hear the commentary from last week with Mayorkas talking about not having the money for the next storm. And this next storm is a son of a gun, put it that way. Son of a gun, of a storm heading in. So if we already can't keep up with the federal response to the damaged areas from Florida up through as far as Virginia, then you bring another storm right on top of Florida. What are you going to do with that? How are you going to respond to that? I mentioned this this morning. Let me read a couple of things here before we go to the news. So a friend of mine is a lineman. And he started texting me last night. And I think and if you didn't hear me talk about it this morning, what is important here is he's just working. He's been doing this for 3 decades, working, doing, you know, electrical restoration after storms. This is a guy who is not watching the news, not in the news business, okay? And so this is not against the backdrop of some bigger narrative. So he sent me pictures last night, some of the work they were doing in flooded areas, restoring power. And I'll read it, just kind of verbatim here, so this is how we talk to each other. He said, "It's a damn mess over here, old boy. I'm ready to come home to my house, Alabama." And I was reacting to the pictures, said, "Wow." He said, "The poor folks in the rural small towns don't even realize what support and resources they're not getting. I hadn't seen a FEMA tree hauling contractor, etc., like we have back home after storms. Man, it's pitiful. A lot of these towns will never recover." So I asked him where he was. He, at that point, and they're moving, they've worked in, I guess, Vidalia. They may be going to Augusta, but he's working in Hazelhurst, Georgia. Small town in Georgia. This is not up in the mountains, y'all. This is southeast of Atlanta, down southern Georgia. He said he spent 7 days there so far, leading 70 men, contractors out of Connecticut, awful conditions. And I said, you know, what are you seeing for not having a response? Why is there not what's wrong with FEMA there? He said, "I'm not sure." Now, once again, this is not a political commentator. This is not on the backdrop of any news cycle fitting in a narrative. This is what he says. But I said, "What about the FEMA fail?" He said, "I'm not sure, but it's really evident. I'm not sure if the town mayors weren't prepared for it or it's a state level or federal." I said, "Well, who are you seeing helping? Supplies and et cetera." He said, "These towns," and he also added in, "these towns hardly have any water infrastructure left." And he's going through these smaller towns in southern Georgia. And I said, "Well, who's helping?" He said, "Churches, local volunteers from other states, and I have not seen," okay? This is somebody who pays attention to, said, "I have not seen the Red Cross, the National Guard, or any government agency." Now, that was last night. It's been 10 days? I had a calendar in front of me. 10 days or more since this? That's what's going on. And I even asked him. I mean, I said, "Hey, what do you think about the damage to y'all's north and the lives lost up there?" He said, "I don't know." And he sent me a picture where they're sitting as linemen are in some big parking lot where they're sleeping at night, getting ready to go for another grueling day. They're not watching the news. He didn't even know about it. So that's what's going on out there. And it's now about to be impacted by yet another storm. And so if FEMA can't deal with this, how are they going to deal with that? And we'll talk about that, like I said, and coming up in just a little bit, AL1's Congressman Jerry Curl joins me. All right, to go back to a question I asked there at the, I guess, right after I talked to Todd Stacey on this 1 year since the October 7th attack in Israel. And I said, let's take the people out of it for a second, the citizens. Because you can talk about the 1,200 Israelis dead, talk about tens of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza dead. Let's take out the people in those numbers that are non-combatants, all right? Let's talk about these are just citizens on either side. Take them out and let's leave it to a discussion of the combatants. And then I boiled it down to this, the question I wrote myself this morning. Who would you rather have boarding your plane? Okay, the people are going to board the plane one way or the other. There are going to be a dozen of them. Would you rather it be 12 members of Hamas or 12 members of the IDF? Just ask yourself that question. Like, I'm a person who sees some nuance in this, that what can be done to reduce the innocent Palestinian lives, it concerns me. It does. I still defend Israel's right to defend themselves 100%. But if you want to boil this down and ask yourself the question, who's in the right, who's in the wrong? And you can even remove, at this point, it removes the biblical portion of it and just make it pragmatic, secular as all day long. 12 are going to get on the plane. You can have 12 members of Hamas get on the plane with you, or you can have 12 members of the IDF get on with you. What's your choice? 343-0106. We'll read some of those responses when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:51, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So that's my buddy Trey. 16 years of getting rid of junk at homes and businesses and storage units and backyards and everywhere in Mobile and Baldwin counties. he could do it for you as well. Done it for me personally, done it with his radio station. Several of us here at the station have used his services. And if you go look at the Google reviews, hundreds of y'all have used him as well, which is great because when somebody stops, it tells me something. It's easy to go online. Online is full of people chirping about stuff, right? They're unhappy about this, that, or the other. It takes a lot when somebody goes to say, hey, that service was fantastic. So you think about when you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these positive reviews, how many people are like, that was good. I'm glad I did that. So be glad you did that when you get 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You make an appointment, too. None of the windows of time stuff. You know, they'll be there sometime in the next 3 days. No, you go online or you pick up the phone and you make an appointment. They find the day, the time that works for you. They set the appointment. When you're there, they're there. You point at the junk you want gone. They quote you a price right there on the spot. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Or like I said, the name is the phone number. Just call them. Ask for Trey. 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, to the text line here, and some of these are a little dated, but let's catch up with these. Tim had said, I guess in my discussion with Todd Stacey, he said, I can only imagine how much kickback this union boss is going to get because he agreed to back to work to make the Dems look better for the reelection. It will cost them a pretty penny. He's talking about the ILA strike. Your friendly neighborhood banker said, would I want 15 Muslims boarding a plane with me or 15 Jews? Give me the Jews 10 out of 10 times. But see, you're kind of missing what I'm saying. That let's take the citizens out of it, right? Because there are plenty of Israelis that aren't, you know, hurting anybody, and there are plenty of Palestinians that weren't hurting anybody. But if I gave you the choice of 15 or a dozen, whatever, members of Hamas or 15, 12 or 15 members of the IDF, who do you want on your plane? That should tell you a lot. Let's see. Steve says, hey, Sean, let's cut Egypt and Pakistan's allowance. Tell them we're building the Cairo Bridge over the Mobile River. Yeah, several people, like Paul saying, Milton looks scary. It is a very scary looking storm. And like Dr. Bill said, it is record setting in its strength. B-Dark says you can't trust a Palestinian sitting next to you, but you can put your life in the hands of an IDF soldier. Let's see here. Unnamed texter. Sean, if you're flying El Al Airlines, they're given the option of 10 Hamas or 10 IDF soldiers. Choose Hamas members as they will be in boxes in the cargo space, leaving more room in the passenger cabin. Oh, that's Avid. Thank you. Let's see. Joe says, I'll take the ones that don't want to kill all the infidels. Matthew, Sean, one question to be asking FEMA. What will y'all do if we have a major earthquake or a terrorist attack? FEMA had time to stage resources and get ready for Helene. And they still drop the ball. What happens if there's a sudden emergency that FEMA has no notice to respond to? Clearly, the leadership at FEMA and DHS is lacking. The cogs in the wheel, employees under them, are just as bad. Now, we can go back. I said this morning, look at the Katrina response. And there you had a Republican in office, right? And Bush. And I wonder, you know, if people are talking about the $750 we're going to give to the people in those affected areas, let's look at the numbers, dollars that people got who lost everything from Katrina. Now, we can say that the trailers they put them in weren't the best trailers, but they did those. But there's been a pattern of this in the past. I think I mentioned it this morning. I made fun of this years ago. There was a snowstorm in D.C., and they shut down the FEMA offices. I said the delicious irony of that. They shut down FEMA for an emergency. But in this case, honestly, from the $750 or just the response to get people anything to stand on, if we can't do this right now in Florida, Georgia, Western North Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, South Carolina, then we're going to bring another record level hurricane into Florida with a different, you know, different name, different solution. Maybe some of the same areas reaffected in Florida, right? I mean, remember the flooding they had in Tampa? So reaffected areas, and then new areas of Florida that didn't have any problem before. Once again, I say that the day after, I don't expect FEMA to be there. I don't. That's when you help your neighbors. But 3, 4, 5 days out, 6, where are they? Like I said, I just read you the text back and forth with a friend of mine who's a lineman working over in Georgia. This texter says, Shane says FEMA is a joke. It's another way for the federal government to get money and send it elsewhere. I agree with everyone should stop paying taxes until the federal government knows how to take care of its own people and spend the tax dollars that we pay on the citizens of this country instead of foreign entities. And then this texter says, Sean, have you noticed that most of the mountain people are white? Just saying. Okay, so texter, let's just look at this for a second. There are plenty of black people in Georgia, in towns like Hazelhurst, where my buddy's working. It's not, why it gets boiled down into this, like the conspiracies over the weekend. The conspiracy is a conspiracy of omission and failure. The idea that it was steered specifically, you know, somebody said, well, they steered the storm, you know, this, okay, come on. But it's you had one job, FEMA, and it's to respond to this, and once again, you failed. You failed on this. And now we got another storm coming in right after. What are we going to do? And more of what we've seen already? Because that's not exactly making the cut, in my opinion. Coming back after the news, Congressman Carl will join me. He has an op-ed over at Yellowhammer News that came out today. It says the Biden-Harris administration should put Americans first. Exactly what we're talking about. We'll talk about that with Congressman when we come back. Also, get your calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. And if you didn't hear Dr. Bill's update earlier, we'll get that posted up later on. But, I mean, to surmise, he's talking about Milton, a record-setting storm right now. He does see it coming down some in strength by the time it makes the Florida coast. A beast right now, and it will still be a beast when it hits Florida, Category 3 probably. And that's going to be on Wednesday. All right, news is coming up next.